everyone. Welcome back. I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 33 of the Art Scene Podcast. My guest today is my friend and former classmate at the University of San Diego, Amanda Noodleman. Last time she was on, she discussed Black Light, an exhibition she co-curated as a grad student at the California College of the Arts. Now she's back on to talk to us about the latest exhibition she helped curate over at the Caddis Art Foundation titled The Feminist School of Painting, a solo show featuring artist Ad Minoliti. But before we get into our conversation, here are a few events I wanted to highlight here in the Bay Area. First, over at the Berkeley Art Museum, there's a new exhibition organized through the museum's Matrix program, featuring work by Christina Quarles, which presents bodies in a state of flux or transformation. The show ends on November 18th. Then, over across the Bay in Oakland, Part 2 Gallery just opened up a new show this past weekend titled Provisions, featuring the paintings of both Liz Hernandez and Ryan Whalen. The show is a meditation on the transformative experience of food, and the Mary Duel also examines the disruptive power of providing for those you love, to slow down a busy life and to make a meal. The show runs through December 7th. Lastly, in conjunction with the YBCA's Ban 8, artists Marcela Pardo Ariza and Andrew Wilson will have a talk about their work in the exhibition and on queer intergenerational family and kinship. The talk is on November 15th at 6 p.m., and there will be music and drinks. All right, now let's get to my conversation with Amanda Noodleman. So welcome back.
Hello, Louis.
Thanks for coming on again. For our listeners, this is probably the third time we're trying this because I can't figure out how to work GarageBand on my phone. But anyways, we're going to do this again. So last time I had you on here, we were finishing up grad school, and now you're at Caddis. And I'm going to ask you, what is your title there right now? Because you mentioned it before, but it's a little long.
Yes.
So I'm going to have you say it again.
I know, if I can. Exhibitions manager and assistant curator of Americas and video.
Okay. And you're like,
maybe.
Are you sure?
No.
and you've been there, what is it? It's going to be almost a year, maybe?
Yes, it's just about a I've been working part-time since last summer.
Yeah.
And full-time since the spring. So, I've been with Caddis for a little over a year. In this role since earlier this year.
And it's a smaller institution. It's not like a big place, but can you tell me a little bit what they do?
Caddis was founded in Paris in 2006.
Yeah.
By family members, Sandra Turgeman and her uncle, Vincent Worms. It's a nonprofit foundation. And in 2011, Caddis San Francisco opened and started running programs and exhibitions. So the kind of primary things that Caddis does are exhibitions. Each site does three exhibitions a year. One of them is a residency exhibition. We also host something like 15 to 20 programs on each site, and that's in addition to many international collaborations that take place in various regions with curators that are working in those areas that, kind of unfold in a series of programs like seminars and exhibitions and artist commissions.
Yeah.
The other, kind of primary function of Caddis is that we are a collecting organization. So we have a little over 1,300 objects represented by about 800 artists. And those collections, live between Paris and San Francisco and is the foundation upon which we build all of our programs.
Yeah. And do you guys, I would assume that the collections at both locations kind of transfer back and forth for various exhibitions, I would assume, right?
Or at least that's the idea. Yeah,
right?
They're all part of the Caddis collection.
Yeah.
We just, run separate acquisition meetings and have the collection stored in both Paris and San Francisco.
Yeah.
And that collection building is led by both the local teams in Paris and San Francisco, but also a wide network of advisors who are, working locally and recommending work to us as well.
Do you guys operate as two separate teams? Do you ever collaborate with the team in France and then vice versa?
Yes. There are definitely ways in which our roles overlap. And
yeah.
So we're working together to, You know, there's a communications person in each side. There's a collections manager in each side. But, you know, for the most part, we do operate pretty independently in terms of the way that the programs and exhibitions and residencies are developed. There's a lot of communication about, you know, about artists and works, about people, like for certain types of programs, like who we think are well suited, and we get lots of advice from each other, and we're definitely collaborating on some cross-organizational initiatives. But we are, you know, kind of running our own programs as well.
Okay, that's cool. I was also, I don't know, for some reason in my mind, right, I had like, you know, guys teleconferencing each other, like, hello, France, hello, San Francisco. And like, what
No,
do you
we
guys
totally
work
do
at?
that
Do you
once a
guys really
month.
do
We
that?
have an international call, so we're all talking together about, you know, whatever is happening locally, and then the things that we're working on together.
Yeah. And why do they pick San Francisco, I guess, of all the places in the US?
Yeah, so Vincent came to the United States for graduate school at MIT and then moved to San Francisco, and he's been living here for something like 30 or 35 years. So this was like a kind of natural place where he could be involved.
That's great. He picked here instead of Boston. Probably a
Agreed.
little better weather over here. So one of the things that you do in your job too is that you guys, I mean, you like sometimes alternate. I guess you all take turns curating shows, right? Is what it seems like. So, just I, you know, and that's just because I come from a bigger museum where there's like a hierarchy. But you know, you guys all have different job titles and different responsibilities. But I think that's really cool that you all rotate. Being able to curate a show at Caddis, right? It's not just like, oh no, just the two curators do that. You're just like the support team, like, or is there still a little bit of that?
Yeah, I mean, there's always a little bit of like seniority at play, but for the most part, Caddis is pretty flat in terms of who gets to propose programs. The events very much are kind of are open. We certainly, you know, Jordan Stein is our programs director, but you know, especially when programs are happening, are being developed in tandem with an exhibition, the curator working on that exhibition is going to often propose, you know, lead the design of that program in tandem with him. And even outside of the exhibition programs, people can propose events. Exhibitions kind of rotate, you know, there's our slots for certain types of exhibitions, and that, you know, is managed by whoever, and we're sort of regionalized in the way that we support different programs. So for example, I'm the Americas assistant curator, as I may or may not have mentioned when reciting my title, I don't remember. But then, you know, it's like I have colleagues that are working in the Asia program. And so you'll be kind of connected to when those programs come through.
You know, and I remember when we last talked, you know, and you were just in grad school and you were still trying to, like, you knew you wanted to be a curator, right? And, but you were still trying to figure out, like, what type of place you wanted to go work at. And you opted for, you had the smaller place. And I don't know the answer to this, but only you would, you know, was that kind of the conclusion you came to when you finished up grad school, where like you wanted to start out at a smaller place rather than like a big place, like a De Young or an SF MoMA or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. It wasn't a I don't know that it was an intentional decision at first. I was offered a fellowship with Caddis that I was really enthusiastic about, and as I spent more time with the institution, our sort of mutual desire to continue working together evolved. And I mean, Caddis for me has been a really wonderful place to cut my teeth, I guess, for lack of a better word, because it's a really flexible institution. It's highly collaborative. There's a lot of all the positions have this kind of hybrid feel, which, you know, at times can be challenging in terms of context switching. But at the same time, I'm always a person that wants to have my hands in everything.
Totally. Yeah, I get it.
And so I feel really lucky to be able to work in multiple capacities at Caddis. And, you know, part of that is the exhibitions management, which is really fun to work directly with artists to develop the space and their kind of vision for that. And then also, I love working with the preparators and production managers. I think that they're super brilliant, and yeah. they're the people that make all of this stuff happen. So I really love working with that team.
Yeah, there's not as much in a smaller place. There's not as much distance or buffers yes. between you and the yes. the installation crew and the preparators when putting on exhibitions, right? You get to have more interaction with them.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I ask that because, you know, I think that's a thing that I've come to. That's the kind of topic of discussion that I think I talk about with some of my former classmates, mm-hmm. where they're done like working at the very first place that they worked at after grad school, and now they're like, okay, you know what? I don't want to work at this type of place, or maybe I want to keep working at this type of place. And I have friends that, you know, they've worked at a bigger institution, mm-hmm. and they're like, you know what? I actually like just working at a smaller place, and it just fits more what they want to do with like the rest of their career. And then sometimes it's the reverse, where they like don't like it,
right?
Or some of them just abandon it and they just go to an art gallery and they go to a commercial route. but I always like to hear kind of what your experiences are at a different place and just the differences, you know. And at the end mm-hmm. of the day, they're not one. I don't think anyone is better than the other. I think it's just comes down to your preference.
Totally.
And you get really good experiences at either type of place.
It seems like. Yeah, I think that's right.
So talking about the opportunity to curate something, you had a big part in organizing / curating the Feminist School of Painting, which is the current solo exhibition over at Caddis. And the artist is named Ad Menoliti. And so tell me about it. Tell me like how the idea came to be. How did you get to work with Ad? And was it her idea or was it something that you collaborated on with her?
Yeah, so the project was initiated by our former director, Devin Bella. She, you know, was the one that brought one of Ad's paintings into the collection and asked her to apply for the residency program, and, you know, was the kind of one leading this initially. I was supporting her in organizing some of the preliminary research and in the meetings that we were holding, and then when Devin left Caddis this summer, I kind of took over the execution of the exhibition. Devin is still involved as a co-curator and advisor to the project, but I've been, you know, kind of working with Ad really closely since she's been here at the beginning of September to finalize the workshop collaborations and the installation and, coordinating the outreach to get people into these workshops,
sure.
Which has been a total privilege. And I'm really happy that, you know, Devin brought me in on this project early on and gave me that opportunity. And then, you know, that Ad has been such an open and kind of amazing artist to work with.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned programs because that's the unique thing about this solo exhibition is that it's not like a traditional exhibition in that you go into a gallery space and it's just like, here's the art on the wall. It's a little bit more than that, where it's various like programming, even courses that are like, and it's over like, what is it, a couple months or 2-3 month period of time, right?
Yes.
So when it came, and some of the courses are actually taught by local artists as well. Mm-hmm. Was this something that was put together based on Ad's network of people that she knew, or was this something that you helped her with?
Yeah, that's a great question. So Ad, was invited to apply for this residency, but she very much brought this idea of the school to Caddis in San Francisco. She had long been interested in San Francisco's history of progressive rights and culture, especially around LGBTQ rights, and she was very much interested in that history and the archives that exist here and the people that are thinking about those types of issues, reproductive rights and equality for women and queer and trans people is extremely important to Ad and very much informs her practice. And so she was really interested about that history here in San Francisco. And she came here knowing a couple people that she definitely wanted to meet. But for the most part, that was the side of the equation that Caddis was able to support, was kind of helping her tap into a local network of friends and colleagues and, you know, people that are living in and working in the arts in San Francisco.
And, you know, tell me what is one of the highlighted, because it's not done yet. I think November 17th is the when it all ends, right?
The last workshop. But the exhibition's open through December 15th.
Oh, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. So tell me what is, you know, describe one of the workshops that's good, like what it entails.
Right. So the workshops are really the kind of core of the feminist school of painting. Ad has transformed the galleries at Caddist into this really vibrant classroom. All of the walls are covered in these, you know, brightly colored murals, these kind of geometric forms that have these hybrid kind of faces and characters with animals and other types of monsters or creatures. She cut a giant triangle into one of the walls of the gallery, which is the most beautiful thing. I mean, and it's like, it makes you think like, why aren't all windows a triangle? Because yeah. I think this is just how it should be from now on. But the classrooms, these murals are, the way that she's thinking about it is that the murals are really activated by the workshops and the people that use those spaces as a space for learning and making.
Yeah.
So, for example, the first workshop that we hosted was in collaboration with Sarah Hotchkiss, mm-hmm. who's a local writer and artist. And each of these workshops, I should say, uses as a starting point a traditional genre of painting. And through over the course of the lecture and the paintings, painting time, the participants are presented with a kind of alternative history or an unlearning of a traditional art historical narrative or history, and also sort of the cultural ideas that are associated with that genre. So this first workshop with Sarah was mythology painting. And what Sarah did very brilliantly is to draw a kind of parallel between mythology painting and science fiction, and the ways that both of those genres explore human fears of the unknown and kind of generate these stories to explain things that we don't understand, and how these stories often make women the villains and can be highly misogynistic. Yeah. And really enforce these kind of traditional and binary gender roles, which is something that Ad is very much trying to counter in her work by offering these sort of boundaryless characters and spaces. And so through drawing these parallels, Sarah used a kind of case study of the Alien movie franchise.
Yeah.
As a way of demonstrating a kind of like feminist character and a yeah. feminist storyline.
Right. I know, because that whole series is about mainly the one like woman character who's really the only one that saves or survives everything that's yes. going on in this.
Ripley, yeah. Played by Sigourney Weaver, yeah. is the only rational character.
Right.
She is the one that is always surviving and telling them, hey, maybe weaponizing alien DNA is like a terrible idea.
Right.
So her and the cat survive, which is great. Sorry, spoiler for anyone who hasn't yeah. seen a 40-year-old movie. But, you know,
which is also symbolic in itself, now that I think about it, right? That the cat survives, which is like the cat's mostly like associated with when we talk about cats and dogs. And like,
yes.
like it's mostly associated with like the feminine like side of people, I guess.
That's,
like,
no, that's right? totally spot on. And yeah. Ad, too, mentions how cats are associated with witches and, you know, the witch hunts were, you know, a way to target women who were not conforming to societal expectations,
right.
who were operating independently or making medicines outside of, you know, anything that was countering religion. And so the cat is a little bit of a symbol for her as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also, too, I think Ripley's character is considered one of the first female protagonists of a science fiction film, like to be the kind of lead character and the hero.
I didn't even know that. I didn't even yeah. think about that. Yeah.
And then there's also this kind of side plot or explanation that Sarah brings in that over the course of the movies, Ripley and the alien, like the alien queen, who is you find out as a female organism in like the second movie, but they're there's a kind of bond between them that comes out in the first movie because they're both mothers and they're both trying to protect children. And there's something, there's a kind of intimacy that's created between a human and the other with a bond over motherhood, which isn't something that can be portrayed necessarily between male characters. And it's exploring this way in which perhaps the other can be understood by being connected through these different relationships, not just motherhood, but a sort of willingness to acknowledge or understand that, like, you know, this person or this thing is protecting its own. And it's just trying to survive. And while obviously Ripley is still trying to kill this thing, there is some sort of like respect or acknowledgement that's evolving from that relationship, instead of just a desire to eradicate them in some way. Although she does want to do that too. But
well, and so visitors to Caddis like sign up in advance for these workshops, right? Is that how it works?
That's right. So
how's been the reception? Like, how have you guys had like a full, have been fully booked on any of these?
So yes. Yeah. And I say that with surprise and delight. I'm sorry. I just went down this rabbit hole of explaining the conceptual like construction of this last workshop, which also I might add, we've built a website for the project where eventually recordings of these lectures will live. In addition to class notes from these things. So this information is accessible even if you aren't able to attend the workshops.
Yeah.
The website's live now. It's F School, like the feminist school of painting, fschool.caddis.org.
Yeah.
And so we'll be uploading that information. But in terms of people, the workshops are still going on. So if you do want to join, you do register in advance. We also sometimes have room for drop-ins. We can't guarantee that you'll get in if you don't sign up ahead, but it's a $5 deposit, which you get back once you've registered for the workshop.
Yeah.
And then once you get there, there's about an hour of this lecture and discussion, which I've described with Sarah's example.
Yeah.
And then the second hour is open studio painting time. And so we provide all the materials for free. The first half of the class ends with a sort of prompt or question, and then, you know, we turn on some music and people sit and paint. And, you know, we stay till 5 o'clock when the gallery opens and people are welcome to stay, and they have.
Yeah.
And these things have been totally full. It's been kind of amazing.
Well, that's what I was asking, how full does it get? Because just based off of what you're just telling me on the example you gave me, I was like, I want to take that class.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't college like visual art courses like this?
Right.
Yeah, and I was interested to see, like I wonder if people caught on and be like, hey, like, you got to go to this thing. That's really great.
Yeah. Well, that's Ad's whole point is to rethink the infrastructure of education and specifically arts education.
Yeah.
And the way that, you know, she kind of breaks down the hierarchy between high culture and low culture, and, you know, using pop culture or other types of experiences that are not necessarily validated graduate degrees or something like this. That's not to say that the collaborators don't have graduate degrees. I think most of them do. But it's the way in which this information is delivered.
Yeah.
And it's all kind of like, you know, it's a kind of DIY setup. There's a projector with the computer out on the table, and people are just seated around a table, which I think too is a way of trying to break down the kind of teacher student relationship. Ad kind of describes this project as an act of selfishness in some ways, where she has invited these people as collaborators because she wants to learn from them.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is to kind of flip this idea of like authorial genius or something.
Right. Like, it's more of like an exchange of like the students and the teachers with each other, right? It's not just like only the teacher knows everything.
That's right.
And whatever they're saying is like the word of God. Like, right. You're allowed to challenge and have a conversation.
Right.
Yeah. So you said the last workshop is November 17th, right?
That's right.
So, but it's still on exhibit for another month. What is on exhibit other than the beautiful murals that you've described in the space? Is some of the work from these workshops on display, or?
As a matter of fact, yes. For people that leave their paint, who don't want to take their paintings with them, Ad's been hanging them in the window in the windows that face Folsom Street.
Oh, that's cool.
Or excuse me, face 20th Street. So this is kind of a really great way, like, to see you get your work in the window. So, like, anyway, these, so this, the kind of small paintings that people produce are going up in the windows that face the outside. But within the classrooms, there are, Ad has a series of paintings that look like coloring book pages that are kind of a black, a white background with black outlines. But they kind of, they start to intersect between the domestic and the and animals and plants and landscape, and they're bringing all of these things together in these, like, really kind of fantastical ways, also with, like, geometric figures. So we have, you know, tons of these coloring book pages printed out on regular paper and have coloring materials that people can use in the classroom. There's also a video reel that plays on projection of lecturers and, you know, YouTubers and political speeches that Ad has compiled into a playlist that just play all day long through the space. There's not really any distinction either between what the content of this is, except for that it tends to have to do tends to be feminist and queer in nature. There's also a library that has been curated by Ad that addresses some of the books are written by collaborators of the workshops or have been suggested by them. A lot of them are zines, a lot of them purchased here locally at Adobe Books and other places, and things that Ad has also brought from other places in the world that, you know, really start to flesh out the ideas of the kind of conceptual framework for the show. There's also a third component called Objects of Study, which was curated by Devin Bella, and it presents objects that were selected or made by the workshop collaborators, and they kind of function as a different kind of portal into the workshop. So they're kind of object or visual traces of the material that they're sharing. You know, there are artworks, there are sculptures, there's a ceramic sculpture by a local artist named Laura Rocas. There's from Sarah, she gave us this xenomorph figurine, which is the like name for these aliens from the Alien movie. There's a picture, this kind of famous picture from the 60s called the Earthrise photo, which is one of the first images of Earth from outer space. And there are, you know, they kind of operate as these other ways to interface with that information.
I love that the whole this whole show, like this whole exhibition, is flipping like whatever the norm is of a of like an of an art exhibition, like on its head. Like even like not just the fact that the show itself is a series of workshops and not just like a gallery showing of work on a wall. The fact that the way the workshops are taught are also like different from what a normal like course in art, like history and visual art, like a studio class is taught. And then the fact that like even the stuff that's on that gets put on exhibit is like different than what normally people would think gets is allowed to get exhibited, right, in a gallery. Like the whole thing is like flipping everything on its head and just like not, you know, just making it different and more interactive, I think, with the audience is what it seems like too, right?
And that has been, you know, add talks about this as being an experiment. Like, the whole thing is just a kind of like a kind of playground to test out these ideas. Like, her whole approach is, as she describes it, a feminist approach. So it's like, how do we tweak? How do we unlearn? How do we subvert? How do we include bodies and people and histories and objects or whatever that are not normally addressed in historical narratives, and how do you incorporate that into a space, into a workshop, into a display? And, you know, she is, you know, for her, like, failure is a big part of it. Like, I wouldn't consider much of this to be a failure, to be totally frank. I'm pretty biased, though. This has been such a really enjoyable experience. But, you know, that's what her philosophy kind of embodies. And so I think that that's what makes this a really rich a rich ground to work on is her approach.
Is there any idea to take this, like, once it's done at Caddis, to like take this elsewhere, or to like do this idea again but in another space?
That probably would be Ad's dream. I mean, part of what the website functions as too is it's an archive, but as she's described it, it's also a kind of template or a guide for how other people might execute their own feminist school of painting. And I mean, for Ad too, it is part of a series of other projects that have taken place over the last year. One was in Mexico City at Casa Siqueiros, that has a kind of feminist store. All the things that you can purchase there are made by women, a lot of them by local craftspeople. And there have been various programs there that cater to both children and older people. Like, there's one of the events was, you know, thinking about end of life kind of issues. And then she also held a symposium in Buenos Aires as part of Art Basel Cities. And it was a symposium of expanded painting and speculative fiction. And so invited lots of different types of folks to present over the course of 6 hours that are doing, you know, pretty incredible work. But the school is part of this series of works that deal with feminism and art and education. And there's also this kind of thematic of the green triangle that is a through line for all of these projects, and partly what the color green refers to, which is in the exhibition, which it very heavily features in the murals and the triangle cutout. And it refers to this political, or this campaign for legal abortion in Argentina, which up till now and currently is illegal. And there, the symbol of this campaign is a green triangle, which comes from the green scarves that the activists from this campaign wear, and something that Ad is very dedicated to, and it's a way to kind of reference the politics and the very real world impacts of society's unwillingness to let go of these kind of outmoded histories.
Yeah. Cool. Well, remind us again to when, to what are the remaining workshops, and to when is it closed?
Yes. The Feminist School of Painting hosts workshops every Saturday from 1 to 3 p.m.
Cool.
Through November 17th, but the exhibition is open through December 15th.
Great. Well, thank you for coming on again.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, it was great hearing you talk about this show. It sounds really great. I mean, you said it was being frank by saying that you thought it was successful, but I mean, it sounds like it was a success.
Yeah.
You know, like, it sounds like, I mean, this is so different. For me lately, I've been very much interested in things that are like different than what the norm is. And this is just like the epitome of it. And so far, I haven't been disappointed. The last couple times I've been at Caddis. So,
good.
This is really cool that this is happening.
Yeah. And I, you know, I might not even, I like maybe might not even use the word success, but it has been such a generative and kind of fulfilling experience. Lots of new faces at Caddis, lots of returning faces for these workshops.
Sure.
And also, it's nice to use art as a platform for connection and exchange.
Yeah, and you even, I believe one of the artists that's currently in the Bay Area now, Triennial, that's over at the YBCA, with Marcela.
Yeah, Marcela Pardo Arisa.
Like, she put on one of these workshops, right? So that's like also really cool that you're also even able to cross pollinate with other things that are like also going on simultaneously here in the Bay Area. So that's also really cool too.
Yeah, it's really exciting, and a lot of that is, you know, to Ad's credit, she, you know, we introduced her to a lot of people, but she's really developed these relationships, which has also been really neat.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thank you. Mm-hmm.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and thanks to Amanda for coming on again. For more information on the remaining workshops associated with the Feminist School of Painting and the show itself, visit caddis.org. While the last workshop is on November 17th, the exhibition itself will run through December 15th. To listen to past episodes of the podcast, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, or you can visit the podcast website at artteampc.com. You can also follow us on Instagram or Twitter at artteampc. All right, till next time, everyone.